From NPR News and Notes, this is Farai Chidea. Is Hillary Clinton playing the race card as we wind down the final Democratic primaries? And the United Nations World Food Program nearly stops all aid into Myanmar. Plus, 13 Philadelphia police officers are reassigned to desk duty after they were caught on tape beating and kicking three shooting suspects. Here on our reporters' roundtable, we've got John Yearwood, world editor at the Miami Herald, Detroit Free Press columnist Rochelle Riley, and Chandra Thomas, assistant editor and writer for Atlanta Magazine. Hi, folks.
Hi.
Hello, Farai.
Hello.
Happy Friday. Well, let's talk politics first. Today, Barack Obama picked up three more superdelegate endorsements, one from a union president and two from congressmen. One of those congressmen is New Jersey Representative Donald Payne, who was an avid Clinton supporter. Now, there have been other Clinton supporters who've essentially defected. Rochelle, do you see the writing on the wall for Senator Clinton, despite the fact that she continues to fight on and on and on?
The writing has been on the wall like a child who's been made to write over and over on the blackboard, "I need to quit, I need to quit," and is ignoring it. I think that some of the tactics that she's using now are laced with desperation and really may hurt her chances at doing anything past this election.
What do you think the exit strategy is, Chandra? A lot of people have said, okay, one thing on the table is that Barack Obama should offer to pay her campaign debts since she's put $11.4 million of her own into the campaign. Other people have said, just make her the vice presidential candidate. What's the exit strategy?
Well, I think it's very interesting that Senator Obama has kind of kept that door open, as you mentioned, for her to run for vice president. He's a smart guy. And he knows that he should definitely keep that door open. I really don't feel that he's indebted to Senator Clinton at all. And apparently that seems to be her thought process, is that Barack Obama does owe her, which I think is why it's been so difficult for her to accept that he is actually leading.
John, let's address the issue of race here. Yesterday, Senator Clinton found herself in a bit of hot water. She spoke to USA Today and claimed that she, not Obama, has appeal among, quote, hardworking white Americans. Exit polls do show that Senator Clinton scores better with blue-collar white voters than Senator Obama, but critics are accusing her of race baiting. Do you think that that charge is fair?
Well, a couple of things, Farai. First of all, though, let me say hello to a good-working African-American who is Rochelle Riley, who is a good friend of mine.
Thank you, John.
It's really clear, though, that I think Rochelle mentioned that the writing has been on the wall for some time. And I think one of the things that we run the risk of happening here is that Hillary Clinton runs the risk of ignoring something that she has said before, that it takes, in effect, a village to win the Democratic, not only the Democratic nomination, but ultimately for a Democrat to win the White House. And the more she carries on talking about this race issue, the more you see that village sort of sectioning off into bits and pieces. And I think at some point in the not-too-distant future, I think we'll get to the point where Mrs. Clinton is going to have to call it quits. Because if you look at the numbers just don't add up at this point. And I'm not quite sure exactly how she sees a path to the nomination remaining. From what I've seen and from what I've read, some people have given her a 5% chance if that much. So I think in fairly short order, maybe after the next primary in West Virginia, we'll probably see that tent folding. But I think one of the things that she really needs to be careful about going forward is whether or not she further splinters this Democratic coalition that's needed to win the White House in November.
Rochelle, you're in Michigan. John's in Florida. Senator Clinton doesn't want to give up the primary results from these states. Now, in Michigan, she was the only candidate among the two remaining on the ticket at all. So the DNC says these delegates will be seated somehow. But what do you think, first of all, how are people feeling in Michigan? And what do you think is going to happen on that score?
Well, there are some folks who are wondering why Hillary Clinton was not upset when the DNC first decided to disenfranchise voters back in December, when they said, if you hold this primary, we won't seat your delegates. So all of a sudden, this seemed to be a surprise when they actually did it. And of course, now they're not going to, and they've come up with the proposal that they think is fair. But the bigger issue is that she looks very hypocritical, in that this was all fine back in January, and as long as nobody was getting delegates, there was no big discussion about disenfranchised voters, but now that she needs them, all of a sudden they've become important. And there is something else. If she isn't careful, she's going to alienate, or she already has alienated, some of the people that she's been counting on, whether she's talking about hardworking Americans who shouldn't be disenfranchised, or hardworking white Americans who somehow she seems to feel are more important for a little bit than hardworking Americans who, quite frankly, have succeeded economically. And some of these folks she's talking about aspire to those same things. If you're going to appeal only to the poor and paint your candidate, your opponent, as elitist, then what are you doing with folks who have raised themselves up and tried to do better? I think that she's forgetting her woman base in focusing just on those blue-collar, hardworking folks, particularly the guys that she's chugging beers with in bars. One of the things that's clear is that she's got about 60% of white votes in some of these primaries, but that means that Barack Obama has gotten 40%, which is unprecedented historically. So she's making a lot of arguments that don't make sense, and the superdelegates now have to pay attention. But as for Michigan,
let me jump in. We just have, sorry to do that. We have a couple more topics we got to get to, and not too much time.
Okay.
I'm going to move on to Chandra, talk a little bit about the tragedy in Myanmar. The cyclone has killed as many as 100,000 people. The numbers keep going up and leaving a million residents displaced. The military government didn't accept aid into the country until yesterday. And even then, the government seized the food and medical supplies and didn't want to let relief workers into the country. What are you hearing? You know, there was a huge outpouring of support across race, across, you know, the country for the tsunami. Is this playing out in Atlanta? Are people paying attention? Do you think there's going to be some money that ends up going to this cause?
I definitely find this case interesting. This morning, the discussion on the government coming out basically saying that they want aid, but they do not want personnel. And I think that's sort of the case of the beggars can't be choosy. You're actually asking for aid, but then you're also specifying how it needs to be administered. And I know there's a lot of concern about whether the government would or the military would actually take these supplies and not administer it to the victims. But I think what was echoing here in Atlanta is this seems very eerily reminiscent of Hurricane Katrina, and there's a lot of Hurricane Katrina victims here, and I just found it interesting that the U.S. Office of Foreign Disaster Assistance was even at one point considering just dropping off supplies without permission, whereas here in America, when Americans were needing supplies, somehow we couldn't find them for several days. And I think that a lot of people are finding this aggressive approach very interesting, and I just wonder if maybe this director of the Foreign Disaster should be promoted to head of FEMA.
Well, John, you know, what about this? I mean, is the U.S. Rhetoric possibly undercutting this country's ability to dialogue with what is clearly a military junta?
Well, there are a few things at play here, and I know one of the things that we saw right after this happened, at least shortly after it happened, is that the First Lady came out in a really unusual move, in which she called the junta there to open up to international aid, particularly aid from the United States. But one of the problems that the junta has is the fact that the U.S. doesn't recognize it. In fact, when the U.S. talks about aid going to Myanmar, they're talking about aid going to Burma, a country that according to the junta, no longer exists. And it's like saying, Farai, that it's like me calling you Tavis every time I pay you a compliment on this show. The junta clearly is not going to like it. But I think one good move that we saw today, however, was that they acknowledged that this aid is badly needed, and they're going to open the door to American assistance, which I think is really significant. What we're seeing is a slight opening from this junta to the aid that's expected to pour in. The U.S. has several ships in the area where people are willing to give aid. The junta has acknowledged itself that some 60,000 people run the risk of dying or missing out there.
All right. John, Chandra, and Rochelle, this is a speed round. Very tight. There was a beating in Philadelphia. More than 15 officers, all of them white, were caught on tape, yanking three black suspects from a car, kicking and beating them. 13 have been reassigned. Reverend Al Sharpton says it's worse than Rodney King. Is this story going to grab headlines and mobilize people? John first.
I think it will, and not only in this country, but we're also seeing it mobilizing headlines around the world where people are looking at the U.S. as a country without laws.
Chandra?
Yeah, I think it's interesting how we're so quick to say this is not a racial issue. The commissioner, who is black, saying automatically this is not an issue. And I think this is going to boil down to what is proper police procedure. And clearly, 3-1 and pummeling restrained suspects is not proper police procedure.
Rochelle, do you think that this is going to actually mobilize people across the country and not just people locally?
No. I think in this case, we as Americans sometimes do not believe what we see. I think this will go the way of cases that have happened over and over, and until it happens to enough people or to the right person, we will continue to see these cases, and they will get worse and worse.
All right. I want to thank all three of you for your time.
Anytime,
Farai. Thank you.
Thank you.
Rochelle Riley is a columnist at the Detroit Free Press. She spoke with us from the studios at the University of Michigan. John Yearwood is world editor at the Miami Herald. He joined us from the studios at the Miami Herald. And we also spoke with Chandra Thomas, an assistant editor and writer for Atlanta Magazine. ¶¶